Torah should be the refuah shlema, as all of our Torah should be that we learn all week. Devora Shira Chaya Bas Hindel Peril, who really needs a refuah shlema, and all of our tefillah should be helpful to her as well. So this evening, as we know, we begin to commemorate Asar B'Teves. Tomorrow we're going to begin the fast of Asar B'Teves. Very briefly, for those who missed the first year that we just had, Asar B'Teves is the day in which we commemorate the beginning of the downfall of the Beis Hamikdash, the Churban Beis Hamikdash HaRishon. That's when the siege was laid on Yerushalayim, when Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel came and decided to destroy Yerushalayim. And that is something that is a very important day on the Jewish calendar. And as a result, I thought it was worthy of us spending some time thinking about the substitute Beis Hamikdash, which is the Beis HaKnesses. As we know, we have a shul today, and that really is supposed to serve in the place of the Beis Hamikdash itself. And there's a lot to think about. Rav Asher Weiss told me on a number of occasions, I think it's a powerful insight, it's an amazing insight. He said later he found it in Rav Yonason Eibishitz as well, a similar idea. But it's something I frankly never thought of. When the Jewish people have been found throughout the Golos, so you ask yourself, what is it that kept the Jewish people, the Jewish community together? What kept the Jewish community alive? It's a very good question, but I think it's correct to assume that two of the major factors that kept Jewish communities alive were the fact that they had Shabbos. Shabbos was always something that kept Jews together, kept Jews alive. And the fact that we have a Beis HaKnesses. The fact that we have a shul means we all have to live near each other. We all need a minyan. And he mentioned that he didn't believe that this was something that was always the true key to the secret of the Jewish people. He thought that that was something that only happened, that only was instituted after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It makes a lot of sense, because if you date back, who instituted Kaddish Kedusha and Baruch Hu? Who had this idea of Dvarim Shebekdusha, where we need a minyan to daven? Whose idea was that? The Anshe Knesset Gedola. It never came around before them. So whoever needed a shul before the Anshe Knesset Gedola? It just simply didn't exist. Everybody who wanted to be spiritual went and davened every day. When he wanted to be ultra-spiritual, he went to the Beis HaMikdash to bring a carbon. Otherwise, there was no shul. There was no community. And Shabbos, you think about it. Shabbos, as we know it today, is nothing like Shabbos the way it was in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. If Moshe Rabbeinu would be seen keeping Shabbos the way he thought Shabbos should be observed, we would all look at him like he's a shegetz. What did they used to do on Shabbos? There was no Isser Mekach U'Memkar, no Isser Muktzah. So what did everyone do on Shabbos? It was a day off from work. You're not allowed to not allowed to do certain things, but Mekach U'Memkar was mutter. So maybe it wasn't a day off from work. You weren't allowed to work the field. So all the farmers came home. That was a great day to go shopping. So everybody would go out shopping. There was no Isser Muktzah. Everybody was handling money. It was like a regular day of the week. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what Shabbos used to be? And the Chachamim came along and instituted, no, we got to do Muktzah, and we have to also institute other ideas. And they were the ones who came up with the Isser Mekach U'Memkar, and all the other Xeris that we have are things that came along much further on in history. And it's amazing when you think about it that these two perspectives, both Shabbos and the need for a minyan and the need for a Beis HaKnesses, is something that really did not exist in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, because it wasn't necessary. The Jewish community were held together by the fact that they had a Beis HaMikdash. Now that we didn't have it, Chazal said, we're going to have a problem if we don't do something to bind the Jewish people together and to figure out how to keep them as one. And the truth is, the first time that you see a mention of a Beis HaKnesses is in the Navi Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah lives at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, and that is the first time, I believe, in Tanakh that we find a mention of a Beis HaKnesses. It says, Ves Beis Ha'am Sarfu HaKazdim Ba'esh. What's the Beis Ha'am? What does it mean? The place where everybody got together. It wasn't just the restaurant. Rashi says over there that it was the Batei Knesios, and that is the first mention. I don't think it's coincidental that the first time we have a mention of a Beis HaKnesses is after the Churban Bayis Rishon, because that is when it became important for them to have Batei Knesios. And before that, it was something that simply did not exist. So we know that a Beis HaKnesses is a very important place, and we know that the Mishnah tells us, we know the Gemara tells us that the Shechina is Shor in the Beis HaKnesses. We know that when a minyan comes together to daven, there certainly is a certain level of Shechina. We know that a Beis HaKnesses really is what defines the Jewish people. We know that when Bilam HaRasha was brought to curse Klal Yisrael, what did he say? Lo yehei lahem batei knesiyos batei midrashos. He was asked to curse the Jewish people and to destroy them. Why did he say they shouldn't have a Beis Medrash or a Beis HaKnesses? The answer is, because without a Beis Medrash and a Beis HaKnesses, we're not a people. Bilam knew exactly how to curse the Jewish people. That is why he chose to say, Lo yehei lahem batei knesiyos batei midrashos, because that's what defines the Jewish community. That is what we're all about. So, now that we don't have the real Beis HaMikdash and we're in a state of Churban and Avelus over that loss, let us talk a little bit about that which is left, which is, as we refer to, the Mikdash Ma'ad and some of the halachas that pertain to a Beis HaKnesses as it is known today. So the Navi Yecheskel lives at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon as well. And the Navi Yecheskel prophesied that there was going to be a Churban, that Nebuchadnezzar was going to come and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And the Navi Yecheskel, not surprisingly, is the one who is quoted in the Gemara Megillah Daf Chav Tes. This famous pasuk, Vayehi lahem lemikdash ma'at, who said that? Yecheskel. And that's where the Gemara has the source. Vayehi lahem lemikdash ma'at, Amar Reb Yitzchak, Elu batei Knesios batei Midrashos. Guess what? The Navi Yecheskel is the one who came up with that pasuk, with that instruction. And that's what the Gemara is teaching us. I believe, I didn't see the Mefarshim say it, but I believe what the Gemara is teaching us is that Yecheskel lived at a time when there was such a catastrophic loss to the Jewish people. They just suffered a Churban Beis HaMikdash. They lost everything that they looked forward to. And Yecheskel says, no, don't worry. You have something left. Right now, when you're going through the Churban and you think life is horrible, now is when you have the opportunity to still have a Beis HaKnesses and you still have the opportunity to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. Ki lo yitosh Hashem amo. Don't think that the Ribono Shel Olam has destroyed you and he's forgotten about you. No, there's still the opportunity to connect with him. And that's, I believe, why it's Yecheskel HaNavi in particular who chooses to highlight this very important aspect of the Beis HaKnesses. Now, the Gemara Megillah has a discussion whether we assume a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash are on the same level or perhaps one is greater than the other. If you look in the original drasha that we just mentioned on Daf Chav Tes, so we're told, Eile batei Knesios batei Midrashos. It sounds like a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash are of equal value, of equal Kedusha. But we have a Gemara Maseches Megillah where the Gemara questions that assumption. And we're told as follows, Amar Apapi Mishmei Dereva, let's say you want to switch a building from being a shul to being a Beis Medrash. You want to switch it from a shul to a yeshiva or back and forth the other way. So the Gemara says, not so simple. It's not so simple that you're allowed to switch it from one to the other. And we extend that even further today. Let's say you have a shul where used to be very full, and now you have far more women that are coming than men, whatever it might be, for whatever reason. And you want to switch and make half of the shul an Ezras Nashim. Let's say you used to have a balcony. Now the women are too old to walk upstairs, so you want to take a section out of the men's section to make it into a women's section. Not so simple that you're allowed to make a men's section into a women's section. There is an assumption, the Chayyadim and others write, the Avnei Nezer talks about it at length in his Tshuvas, that we assume different parts of the shul at different levels of Kedusha. And it's not so simple just to switch things around arbitrarily. There's a whole process of how it needs to be done, and there's a whole procedure that one needs to follow, like they outline in the name of the Ramban. It's not so simple just to move things around in a shul. So here the Gemara says, what if I want to move a shul from one wonderful purpose to another one? I want to move it from being a shul to a Beis Medrash, or from a Beis Medrash to a shul. Says the Gemara, we're not really sure which way is permissible and which way perhaps is not, because it depends which one is considered to be more Kaddosh. Do we assume that a Beis Medrash is more Kedusha because that's where we learn? Or do we assume that a Beis HaKnesses has a higher level of Kedusha because a Beis HaKnesses is the place where we daven? That's the place where we have Ashras HaShechina. And this is a major question. Lahalacha, we assume that a Beis HaMedrash, that a yeshiva has a higher level of Kedusha than a Beis HaKnesses. Now it happens to be in all of our yeshivas today, we also daven. So it's both a Beis HaMedrash and a Beis HaKnesses. This whole question isn't really so relevant anymore. But in theory, the Gemara talks about this question, and this is the way the Rambam paskins and the Mechaber in Yerodeya, that you're allowed to switch a shul to become a Beis Medrash, but you're not allowed to switch in the other direction. So you'll say it's not relevant for most of us, because how often are we on the committee to decide whether or not we're going to switch a shul to be a Beis Medrash or not? The answer is the Raman Yerodeya does make it relevant, because the Raman Yerodeya says, let's say you have a public collection, and everybody gives money to a certain cause. Let's say we have a building fund, and we want to build a new Beis HaKnesses. So everybody gives money, then it turns out, it's never happened in the history of the world, but let's say, says the Rama, they realize there's an excess, there's too much money. And what are we going to do with all the extra money? We built the building, and now we have $1 million left. What should we do with it now? So the Rama says, well, you got to think about it. Are you able to take that money that was designated for the purposes of a Beis HaKnesses and put it toward building a yeshiva? We have two needs in the community. People gave money for this need, now why don't we give the excess money to that need? Not so simple. Says the Ramah, it depends how you paskin. If you assume that a Beis HaKnesses has a higher level of Kedusha, then if someone allocated money for a Beis HaKnesses, you cannot just take that money and move it to the other account for the Beis HaMedrash. In the other direction also, that's the question that the Rama discusses, which actually is a relevant question, should it ever come up. So although we assume that a Beis Medrash certainly has a higher level of Kedusha than a Beis HaKnesses, we still assume that the rules that govern the two of them are going to be very different. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Kuf Nun Aleph that one is not allowed to do Shar Tashmishav in a Beis HaKnesses. You're not allowed to do your own purposes. I always wonder, and I'm guilty of the same thing. I read my emails when I come to shul. I come to shul 5-10 minutes early, and I'll flip through my emails. It's exactly what the Mechaber says. You're not allowed to do Shar Tzarecho. I'm not reading Tzarchei Tzibur. Okay, some of my emails are interesting shilas, other things, I don't know. But most of the emails I'm reading are the same Bed Bath & Beyond emails that all of us are reading that are totally irrelevant. And it's just a good time to get rid of all the junk email when we're waiting for Ma'ariv anyway. That's exactly what the Mechaber says. A shul is not allowed to be used for our own purposes to do our own things. A shul has to be used for the purpose of tefillah, for the purpose of connecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore we assume that the Kedusha of a shul dictates that we cannot use it for purposes outside of what it was meant for. However, the Shulchan Aruch also says, when it comes to a Beis HaMedrash, although a Beis HaMedrash is considered on a high level of Kedusha, let's say I'm learning in the Yeshiva Gedolah of the Five Towns, and I'm very exhausted, and I decide to bring a coffee and a bag of chips to keep me awake. So there the Mechaber says that would be permissible. Why? Isn't it a higher level of Kedusha? So why should we allow a person to sit in a Beis HaMedrash and eat and drink and do all these kinds of things, when in a shul you wouldn't be allowed to do that? The answer is, says the Mechaber, because the Beis Medrash is the Bei Rabbanan. That's where we all live. Shifti b'Beis Hashem kol yimei chayei. We don't live in a shul. We live in a Beis Medrash. That's what we do. This is what we do all the time. And therefore we assume, if that's part of our home, and this is really what we do, this is the place where the Talmidei Chachamim live, then we assume they're allowed to have coffee in it, they're allowed to have the chips the same way they would do it in their own home. This is their house. And the Mechaber says they're allowed to fall asleep in the Beis HaMedrash as well. You're not allowed to fall asleep in shul. Not allowed to fall asleep in a shul, but you are allowed to fall asleep in a Beis HaMedrash. And this is something that the Mechaber writes. Now, when we talk about Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, that is an important discussion in the Rishonim. Should we assume that a Beis HaKnesses has a Kedusha on a level of Daraisa, or is a Beis HaKnesses only Kadosh Midirabbanan? This is a discussion that the Rishonim have if you look in the Ran, number 3. Kivin de Meikara Asi Lamar Bo Dvarm Shebekdusha. Since we assume that the whole reason why a Beis HaKnesses was started is in order that we should have the ability to get together and to say Dvarim Shebekdusha all as one. Therefore, says the Ran, Hitilu Bal Chachamim Kedusha Midivrayim. Clearly the Ran states that the Kedusha of a Beis HaKnesses is only a Kedusha Midirabbanan. It's clearly only Midirabbanan. However, one of the other Rishonim, the Rebbe Lezer Mimitz in the Sefer Yireim, disagrees, and he says as follows. Mora Migdash, he says, we have a mitzvah of Mora Migdash, which means, as Migdashi Tiro, we have to have fear when we come to the base Migdash. So here he describes, in his opinion, what is encompassed under this general category of Mora Migdash. And he says, Tziva b'hikanes adam l'migdash, that is a mitzvah when somebody walks into the base HaMigdash, or the base HaKnesses, or the base HaMedrash, says Rabbi Elazar Mimitz. Part of that general category of Mora Migdash includes not only when you actually go to the Beis HaMikdash itself, but also when we go to a Beis HaKnesses, that also would fall under the category of the mitzvah of Mora HaMikdash, which means that he believes that the Kedusha that a Beis HaKnesses has is something which is considered a Kedusha Midaraisa. And therefore, if you violate the Kedusha of a Beis HaKnesses, you are in turn violating the mitzvah of Mora HaMikdash, which is something that we need to think about a little bit more carefully. We're not so careful when we come to a Beis HaKnesses, because we have the opportunity to come every day. But here writes the Sefer Yireim, it's something one should be concerned about because perhaps you are violating the Isser of Mora HaMikdash. Now, because we assume that a Beis HaKnesses is referred to as a Migdash Ma'at, because it has some of the properties, some of the characteristics of a Beis HaMikdash, there are a number of halachas that are governed by the fact that we have that assumption. So number one, most simply, the Shari Tshuva writes in Arachayim, Chelek Aleph, the Shari Tshuva says that we all have an obligation to say Karbanos every day. And Neshalma Parim Sfaseinu, now that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we try to say Karbanos. And says the Shari Tshuva, let's say sometimes a person is caught in traffic, and until you get to shul, you're going to be 5 minutes late, so you decide, while you're in the car, you're going to say Karbanos. Says the Shari Tshuva, obviously if you're going to be late, so you do whatever you can do before. But he says, if you have the option either to say Karbanos in shul, or to say Karbanos at home, or somewhere else, obviously you should choose to say it in the shul, because Karbanos are expected to be offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And today we have the opportunity to say the Karbanos in a Migdash Ma'at. Therefore writes the Shari Tshuva, it would make sense that we should choose to recite the karbanos, if we say them, in the shul itself. Don't say it somewhere else. You should choose to say it in the shul. There is another very important discussion Rav Moshe has in a tshuva, that there were those, I don't know which kind of people these were, but he says there were those who felt that it was a big segula that they should take stones from the Kotel and take it home with them to America, like chip off a little bit of the stone and bring it back with them, put it onto their pillows. I don't know what they used to do. So Rav Moshe addresses the issue, is it something that's proper or not? Obviously, no one had any bad intention. You're not going to go and take a whole stone with you back to America on the plane. Person just wants to have a little remnant, so they chip off a little bit of a stone. It's not really going to be noticeable. And he discusses whether or not it's something that is permissible, and he says it is an absolute mistake, absolutely usser. You're not allowed to do that. Why not? Because he says, the Pasuk says, Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokechem. What does it mean, Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokechem? The Pasuk there is referring to when Klal Yisrael come into Eretz Yisrael, we have an obligation to destroy all of the Avodah Zarah of the land. Says the Gemara, that's what you have to do to all of the Avodah Zarah, but Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokechem, don't you dare ever destroy anything that's representative of the Ribono Shel Olam himself. That's what it means. Says Rav Moshe, and this is what all the Achronim understand, that Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokecha means that you're not allowed to destroy a part of the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to destroy it. And therefore he says, how can you chip away from the Makam HaMikdash of today? That would be a violation of Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokecha. Now writes the Mordechai Meseches Megillah, if you look at number Hey, he says, Beis HaKnesses nikra Mikdash Ma'at. Because we assume that a Beis HaKnesses is referred to as a Mikdash Ma'at, therefore he says, Me'ein. Therefore he says, V'lachein, Aser lintotz davar mi beis haknesses. Therefore, you're not allowed to destroy any part of the shul. So obviously, if you're knocking down a building in order to make a bigger building for the shul, that's different. But if a person is going to destroy a part of a shul, not only are you in violation of the Isser of Gezel, because the shul doesn't belong to any of us, but also you're in violation of the Isser d'Araisa of Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokecha. I think about it. When I was a kid, I went to Breuers for elementary school. I don't know if anyone's ever been to the shul there. But they have a beautiful shul, and every seat has a wooden shtender that you put your sitter on. So I remember as kids, there were always kids in the class. We used to go up and daven mincha in the shul every day. It was empty during the day. And I remember as kids, there were always some members of the class who used to take quarters and scratch all of those. It was disgusting that they did it, but they used to scratch their names or their initials into the shtenders in the shul. Now, Breuers is a very official shul in the first place, so anything that's a little bit off is always going to bother someone, but certainly it's a shul. It's a disgrace. How do you do such a thing? And as I grew up, I realized this is not only an Isser Gezel, not only is it something that you certainly shouldn't do because of that alone, but also perhaps it's a violation of Lo sasum kein l'Hashem elokechem. That's exactly what the Rishonim and the Achronim describe, that you're not only prohibited from destroying the Beis HaMikdash proper, but also from doing anything to a Beis HaKnesses that is a destructive act. And we need to be very careful when doing so. There is a discussion that the Shulchan Aruch has about where the entrance of the shul should be. On which side of the shul should we build the doorway that leads into the shul? So the Mechaber writes in Ilchos Beis HaKnesses that in Poschen Pesach Beis HaKnesses, I forgot to put it on here, the Mechaber says, Elo keneged tzad shemispalalim bo ba'osa ha'ir. So if in that city you're going to face a certain direction, so you should have the entrance being in the opposite way. You should walk in from one side and then you should daven toward the other side. And the Mechaber is not clear exactly where he gets this from. He gets it from the Tosefta, where the Tosefta says that we should do this in a shul to always have the entrance opposite from the place where we daven, the same way it was in the Beis HaMikdash. You walked into the Beis HaMikdash, and the way you walked in was directly the way you were going to daven. And therefore, says the Mechaber, based on that Tosefta, this is why we have the practice to do that as well. So why do we not do it here? Why don't we do that? So the Rosh and other Rishonim say it depends where in the world you live, and it depends what your orientation is going to be. And therefore he says, not necessarily does every shul have to be built in that way, but the Mechaber already gives us a clue that even the way you structure a shul, and the way you behave in a shul, the way everything has to be done, is really patterned off of the good old Beis HaMikdash that we used to have in Yerushalayim. In Parsha Shoftim we're told, Lo sita lacha asheira kal eitz, eitz al mizbach Hashem elokecha. We have a prohibition that we're not able to plant in Asherah, you're not allowed to plant a tree next to the Mizbach Hashem Elokecha. So the Sifri writes over there in number Zion, Minayin lenotea ilanu bona bayis bahara bayis. Not only does this mean that you're not allowed to plant a tree eitz al Mizbach Hashem Elokecha, literally next to the Mizbach, but also says the Sifri, we add on to that, by extension, that you're also not allowed to plant a tree on the entire perimeter of the Har HaBayis, because it says, Kol Eitz. Rabbi Lazar Amar Minayin She'enos HaNachsadro Ba'azara. How do you know you're not allowed to make a porch or a lookout in the Azara? Tamu Lomar Kol Eitz. So let's say you have an overcrowded Azara, and you want to make a big porch, an elevation, in order that people should be able to go to the second floor, to be able to watch what's going on. In fact, the Gemara in Sukkah tells us that that's what they used to do for Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Because there were so many people who were there, some people wanted to watch from upstairs. I think the Ezra Snusrim, it says, got pushed upstairs. How are they allowed to build that? It's a major question that's discussed. So they said it was only temporary. They took it down every night, so it wasn't Losita. They didn't really plant it there. They didn't really put the wood in the place. But that's a discussion that's had, all revolving around this Aveira of Losita Lacha Asheri. You're not allowed to plant trees, not only in the Beis HaMikdash itself, but also on the perimeter in the Har HaBayis as well. Now, the Rambam quotes this Lahalacha as well, and the Rishonim have a discussion, does it mean only in the Beis HaMikdash or even on the Har HaBayis? Lahalacha, how do we paskin? That is a major shaila in the Rishonim. So Rabbi Kiva Eger on Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Beis HaKnesses quotes from one of the Kadmonim. I don't know anything about him, but he quotes from David Arama. I assume if Rabbi Kiva Eger feels it's worthy of being quoted, then he was a worthy personality. I'm sure he was. But Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that based on this prohibition of Losita Lacha Asher, that means you're also not allowed to plant any trees in the perimeter of a shul. That's what he says. So, I don't know. I've never been to a shul that doesn't have trees that are planted outside. And Rabbi Kiva Eger says that would be a blatant violation of Losita Lacha Asheira. He doesn't understand what the heter would be. Not only that, the Maharam Shik says he agrees with this psak of Rabbi Kiva Eger from Rabbi David Arma, but the Maharam Shik, who's a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, writes that you would also be in violation of B'chukoseyam Loseilechu. How can you do something that all the Nachrim do? And he says, when they build a church, so they decide to have all the flowers outside, all the trees and everything else, how can we do the same thing? So this was a major point of disagreement in the 1800s. Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger, the Binyan Sion, and others, the Netziv, thought that that argument was not a correct one. Because after all, B'chukoseyam Loseilechu means when the non-Jews do something that is a chok, that makes no sense. But over here, the reason why they're planting trees is because it looks very nice to have gardening outside of a building. Same way we'd all do it by our homes. It's not because we believe in some deity. It's not because we believe we're worshipping the tree. It happens to be last year was an amazing story. There's a guy in Teaneck. Anyone here from Teaneck? No? No? There's a guy in Teaneck who every time, somehow, he always has shilas that nobody else ever deals with. I don't know how they always come up with him. So I remember I was with my father last year, and this guy called. He has an emergency shaila. What's the emergency shaila? He has an Asherah tree. How does he destroy an Asherah tree? How does he make in the midst of destroying an Asherah? And my father was like, who ever heard of an Asherah tree? How could it be? And where he, like you said, where am I supposed to look to find out the dinim of how you burn an Asherah tree? The guy wanted to know how far into the ground does he have to uproot the roots? It's like a crazy question. So what happened? The story was, there was a family in Teaneck that was living there forever, and then a new family moved in and bought the house. Turns out, all the neighbors said that every day, this family, when they moved in 25 years ago, planted a tree in the front yard, and every single morning, it was the shame of it, Azara, every single morning they would go out and bow down to the tree. It was like a real Asherah LeMahadrin. It's like an amazing, amazing story. So it really happened. So most people don't have that. Most people don't have an Asherah that was really planted LeMahadrin and that it was bowed down to a really a piece of Avodah Zarah. That's not what it is. Most of us plant trees just because we want aesthetically that our front yard should be nice and the outside of the shul should be nice. And that's why many Achronim felt this is not an argument to be made when it comes to a Beis HaKnesses. Nobody would say that you don't have the right to put in to put trees around the perimeter. However, we do run into a little bit of a problem because the Rambam, when he talks about it, says that certainly in the shul you're not allowed to do that. And this leads us to a major discussion in the Achronim that they bring up about whether or not you have a right to have any wood in a shul. In the Azara, in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have wood. So we would be up the creek if we paskin like this, that we weren't allowed to have wood in a shul. What about all the benches? What about all the pews, all the tables that we have? What would we do? There are, in fact, a number of very prominent Achronim, the Maharsham and many others, who took this very literally and said, Losita Lacha Asherah, you're right, maybe you're allowed to plant trees outside of the shul, because that's just the perimeter, but inside of the shul, certainly you're not allowed to. The same way in the Beis HaMikdash, you wouldn't be allowed to plant anything or to have trees inside of the shul. So how would you be allowed to do that when it comes to a shul today, which is a Mikdash Mat? Where do we find that in the Beis HaMikdash it was a problem even to have wood that was not planted into the ground? So it's interesting. We have a mitzvah of Hakel that comes around once every 7 years. Now the mitzvah of Hakel, they had to build a bima, shalait. It says they had to build a big platform in order that the melech should be able to stand up and give his public shir, whatever he had to say, read from the Sefer Torah. So we had to build that inside of the Azara. That's where the melech had to stand. Now the problem is that what happens when Hakel falls out on Shabbos? We can't build that on Shabbos. That's Mesakin Mana, it's Bona, it's Soser, it's everything. You can't build that on Shabbos. So you have to build it before Shabbos. But how do you build it before Shabbos, says the Gemara? If you're going to build it before Shabbos, then it's going to turn out you're going to violate the Yisrael Losita L'cha Ashera. So how can you do that? How can you build it before Shabbos? Then it's going to be for more than 24 hours in the Azara, and that's going to be a violation of Losita L'cha Ashera. But if you build it on Shabbos, you're going to violate other things. So therefore, the Gemara tries to work around the issue, how do we deal with it? But from there, many Achronim learn the same thing might apply to a shul. The same way you're not allowed to have a wooden structure, even if it's not affixed into the ground, the same way you're not allowed to have that in the Beis HaMikdash, maybe we shouldn't be allowed to have that in the Beis HaKnesses either. And that would lead to major, major issues, major problems, because every shul seems to violate that. And obviously it seems that the Achronim have assumed otherwise. Basically, when we have the opportunity to commemorate Asar B'Teves and to think about the loss of a Beis HaMikdash, it also gives us the opportunity to hold on to that Beis HaMikdash that we still have, to hold with dignity the great Beis HaKnesses that we are still blessed and zocha to have in our times, which is the Mikdash Ma'at, which, as we mentioned, is something which was not a concept that always existed throughout Jewish history. It's something that came along way later on in our history, but it's something that is really the defining characteristic of what a Jewish community is all about. A Beis HaKnesses is something that is so central to hold a community together, and that's why the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah instituted the Dvarim Shebekdusha, because they realized once Klal Yisrael goes into Galus, there is no way of holding all the Jews together. So everyone should have a meaningful and most uplifting fast, and we'll die.